All right. Thanks for having me here today. This is my second IMCA conference, and I'm really pleased to be speaking in my hometown in New York City. I also would like to introduce one of my colleagues who's here to assist me today, Dr. Michael Nicitelli, who's one of our executive coaches. Some of you may be wondering, maybe you're even a little uneasy, about knowing that two clinical psychologists have been brought in to work with you guys today. And that's a common reaction in people in the financial services industry. Well, don't worry. We're not the typical touchy-feely psychologists you may have seen on The Sopranos or read about or maybe saw when you were in elementary school for attention deficit disorder. We're very different. We're not like the touchy-feely psychologists because the touchy-feely psychologists would walk around and show you projective inkblots like this and that are very ambiguous and very uncertain, unclear as to what you're seeing. So this is a projective card used by, this is a doctored up projective card used by psychologists to really get at what your true underlying motivations, your underlying fantasies, wishes, or drives, what drives you. This gets at that. It elicits it from deep within. So, sir, what do you see here? A what?
Family
crest. Okay, how certain of that are you? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being most certain.
2.
Okay. How about now? No clue. Okay. How about you, sir? What do you see?
Well, originally I saw an American Eagle. Now I see an American Eagle on its
head. Okay. And how certain are you of that?
6.
Okay. How about now? You see anything different?
American Eagle
stand. Okay, so you saw two different things. Let's see. How about you, Miss? Okay. How certain are you of that? 1 to 10. 6. How about now? You see anything different? Part of a map? Okay. Scale of 1 to 10? 6. Okay. So we have a variety of responses here and a lot of uncertainty. And being that I only have an hour to speak, we don't really have time for ambiguity or anything like that. What we do here is we work with individuals on setting and obtaining tangible goals in the present rather than focusing on ambiguous things like this. What we do is we focus on more tangible cards. Now, to really find out what's driving this audience today, what really gets you up in the morning to go to work and close the top clients, what do you see here? Dollar sign? How certain are you? 1 to 10? 10? How about now? Okay. How about you, sir? Okay. How certain? Okay. So we're all seeing the same thing. We're seeing dollar signs, and that's what I know got you here today, is you want to improve your business. Okay. Okay, this is a very important quote to kind of get us going with bullish thinking today. It just talks about how important one tiny little positive bullish thought can be when you're swarmed with a whole herd of negative bearish thoughts that might bring you down during any given workday. Okay, so today we're going to briefly talk about, I'm going to skip over objectives because you guys have it in your PDFs and we don't have a lot of time. Significant research findings from our group on the mental health of Wall Street stockbrokers I'm going to talk about. We're then going to go into some strategies for success in managing volatile markets and managing clients who yell at you in the morning. And we're going to go into a small portion of my subtle sales training workshop, which I've decided to bring to this audience today. And lastly, I'm going to get into some practical examples of how to use bullish thinking and describe what it's all about. Okay. All right. So when we're talking about prior research, in 1999, we conducted an assessment, one of the first clinical assessments of the mental health of Wall Street stockbrokers. And we looked to find any correlations between mental health and annual salary. And basically, we found a strong, significant positive correlation between the variables, levels of emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, which is defined as an emotional callousing that one can develop towards oneself, not understanding how you're feeling, and also treating clients as if they're usable for monetary gain, just kind of depersonalizing the client. Level of depression, level of anxiety, and the variable for number of hours of sleep per night. Taken together, all those variables were positively correlated with a higher annual salary. So, unfortunately, for this sample of advisors aged 22 to 32, the ones who were making the most money at the time of the study were also the ones who were the most psychologically impaired. However, there is some good news, I guess. 8 months later, we did a follow-up on that same sample, and we found that 23% of those same advisors who were making the most money at the time of the study were no longer in their current jobs. And that kind of just leads you to wonder, whatever happened to those people? Did they burn out? Did they make mistakes? Did they do something a little shady at work because they were not operating on all cylinders? The two most important things we found in our research after we did a multiple regression analysis was that we found that the variables for depersonalization and sleep were most significantly indicative of success as a financial advisor. So the more one cared about their clients and became emotionally involved or connected with them, the more money they made. And the fewer hours of sleep per night one had, the more money they made. So the insomniacs who cared were the ones who made the most money at the time of the study. And you would also wonder, you know, as far as the people not sleeping, well, this was a time period where some people were up, staying up all night, and doing research for the next morning on what the next big dream was going to be in 1999. So, also very important, 23% of my sample was diagnosable with clinical levels of major depression, and that's compared to an incidence of 7% in all males. So this is a striking finding, especially at the time of the study in 1999, the markets were doing exceptionally well. So, you can only imagine what it's been at lately. Okay. Also, my research also clarified some attributes that would be characteristics of successful investment management consultants or advisors. And as you can see, we have six different skills that tends to hang well with people who have been successful in what you do. Now, a quick show of hands. How many of you people, if you're honest with yourself today, think that you have all six going for you right now? Okay. All right. How about five? Okay. How about four? Okay, so a majority of you meet the four to six categories, which I expected because, you know, for you to be at this level and at this conference, you should be at performing those skills rather regularly. Okay. Before we get into bullish thinking, it's important to talk about some of the under-the-radar problems that you may be experiencing or a colleague may be experiencing at work before that could hamper them or yourself and hamper your business or your quality of life. And here are some symptoms: depressed mood, irritability, poor concentration, problems making confident decisions, a decrease in sex drive, catastrophic thoughts, meaning you take a small event and blow it into a big one, and other people suffer as a result. Feeling helpless, worthless, insomnia is a symptom. From a muscle tension, headaches, stomach aches, stuff like that. And from a performance standpoint, there'll be a decreased number of calls, meetings with clients, investors, and business relationships. Now, this is all under the umbrella of behavioral paralysis. This is a term we use with our clients. Rather than talk about burnout and depression, we just call it simply behavioral paralysis because you're not getting out of the bed in the morning, jumping ready for work, and you have an increased craving for things that are going to get you going, like stimulant drugs like Ritalin, cocaine, or something like coffee. So you can abuse coffee just as the same. So it's important to just take note of that. Now we're going to jump into some strategies for success. And we have, as you see in front of us, we have the don't aim, just throw the ball target. And don't aim, just throw the ball is what we call a motivational catalyst. And these are empowering statements that we use to inoculate us against the bearish thoughts that could eventually cause that behavioral paralysis that I mentioned earlier. So I use this with hedge fund traders. When they have a lot of increased hesitancy in their trading ability because of a recent failure or a bad trade that went really quick, it will then affect their present trades, and it'll affect their risk appetite negatively. So don't aim to throw the ball. It allows you to get up in the morning, clear your head of all your past failures, and just get going and start your day running rather than walking. Now, this is a phrase I kind of learned way back in the day when I was in Little League. And I remember when I was in Little League, I was a wild, lefty pitcher. And I threw like 5 straight outside pitches. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, my coach screaming at me after every pitch, "Don't aim the ball. Don't aim the ball." And I think I was a little emotionally scarred from this growing up. I think I finally dealt with it, so we're all good. But the point is he wanted me to clear my head before every pitch. And in baseball, they teach pitchers not to aim for the catcher's mitt. They teach them to just throw to a part of the plate. So you just want to stick to your fundamental game and what has always worked for you, your natural given instincts to sell. And as an investment management consultant, you have to stick to a long-term investment strategy regardless of short-term market gyrations or things that could actually make you squeamish, like a client calling you in the morning and telling him he's going to do business with someone else. So you got to stick to your guns and clear your head before you deal with any volatile situation. Okay. Let's see. Excuse me. The guy on the left, the outfielder out there, what do you think is going on in his head? What's he saying to himself? Okay. What else do you think he might be thinking? Anything?
Ball's coming my way.
Okay, he's ready for the ball to come. Okay, how about you? Okay, and how about the guy on the right?
Not focused.
What's he saying to himself? If you were in his head, what would you be saying? Oh, exactly. Not prepared. So, bullish thinking and subtle sales, which I'm going to give you a piece of later, these are action-oriented interventions aimed at being proactive in your jobs. And, you know, they teach outfielders to wait, like the guy on the left, waiting in the ready position, with leaning forward, being hungry for the ball. This guy's craving the next ball to be hit to him. So he's ready for anything that's going to come his way. The guy on the right is back on his heels. He's terrified of the ball being hit to him. He's afraid he's going to lose the ball in the sun. And he'll be backpedaling, and he's not going to know how to handle. He's more reactive. And he's not going to know how to handle, you know, a ball that's hit in the gap as quickly as the guy on the left. So as an investment management consultant, you always want to be proactive in almost like seeing before it happens, you know, market volatility or how you're going to handle it or how you're going to manage the emotional reactivity of a client who you know is going to call you that Monday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning on the dot to complain. So you want to be able to be prepared for what your speech is going to be, what your script's going to be, to calm them down and to calm yourself down. Okay, I brought with me a very important quote and a poem, that I think is very pertinent for getting into the subtle sales element of this workshop. Now, this is all about the pregame and how much effort you can put into your pregame working with people in terms of presentation style and the importance of really knowing yourself first before you can even meet your client. So you have to be able to know yourself and then, in your pregame, do a lot of homework about your clients just to know how to best approach them when you meet them, what face to put on. So my favorite line in this is there will be time to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. And that is a very important line because that is what it's about. When you're doing sales, you want to be able to line yourself up with and present the type of product that you think will be most complementary to the future client's investment strategy or styles. So it's very important to be prepared and put on your best face before we engage in meeting with clients. That brings us to cultivating new clients. A lot of advisors I work with, whether they're seasoned veterans or rookies, they make a lot of mistakes and still have some bad habits that they get into over time when it comes to selling themselves, using a specific pitch, and they can get into, I guess, a habit of using one that has worked for them in the past. They can tend to overuse a certain presentation style or a pitch that they feel comfortable with. It's their ace in the hole. So when we talk about the spaghetti strategy of sales, that's like throwing a bowl of spaghetti against the wall and just seeing what sticks at the end. I look at that when it comes to an advisor's sales pitch or presentation style as lining up 100 potential investors, not taking into account their subtle personality differences and characteristics, and just throwing at them your best pitch or your best type of sales presentation that you've always used, and seeing which client emotionally connects with you. Now, I think that some people use that, and okay, if you want to let some clients go, that's fine. But I don't see the benefit of just letting people go by the wayside and not having taking in new accounts just because you don't get along with them. I mean, how many people here think that they've turned off a client by just your presentation style in the past? By a show of hands. Okay. And how many people here, show of hands, think that they've been annoyed or turned off by a client's presentation style right off the bat, too? See, it's a very common thing. And it's because you're not really aware of what you're going to get and the personality dynamics that can happen when two worlds meet and they collide and they clash. So part of what this subtle sales is being more of like a sniper and really knowing yourself and knowing who you're going to work with so you can best pitch them, you know, in a presentation style that they'll like. You won't have to give up all those clients that would be turned off by being a little bit more flashy or emotional. Maybe that's your best way of doing it. But if you have a guy who's more conservative and doesn't like to see that, you're going to have to know to turn that part of your game off before you get into that room with them. Okay. Also, as far as being a sniper, it's very important to know when you're dealing with these high net worth individuals and trying to get the cream of the crop accounts, it's also good to do your homework in terms of knowing where these people live, what they do for fun, what their hobbies are, more of the cultural escapades that they get involved in, and what their lifestyle is all about, just so you know when you're talking to them how to really get their attention. Okay. Next thing, my coaching practice brings in rather regularly a group of characters, to say the least. But I meet with a variety of advisors who all have very different, distinct characteristics. And for the purposes of this workshop, I'm going to simplify this group of individuals down into four specific categories. We have the decision maker, the catalyst, we have the voice of reason, and facts and fear. Those are four categories that I've seen walk into my office regularly. And basically, each of us has attributes of all four of these groups, these constructs that we created. However, even though there is overlap, I'm going to take you through each one individually. And just keep in mind, you may have some of the attributes of some of the other categories, but if you're really honest with yourself, you'll see that you have a predominance of traits aligning to one particular box. Now, it's very important to find a box for yourself, because unless you find a box for yourself and know how you're coming off to people, you can't really know which pitch or which presentation style to use on a prospective investor. And by placing yourself into that category, you'll know which type of investor will eat your pitch up or your presentation style, or which one will be turned off. So I'm just going to basically go through. These are the decision maker qualities, and I want you to really kind of decide, make a quick decision on where you belong. We have the catalyst, the more magnetic, salesy kind of guy, loves the limelight, a good talker, the voice of reason, perceived as unemotional, requires a lot of trust, thoughtful decision maker, and then fact of fear is very conservative, dependent, obsessive compulsive, very neat, and attention to detail. Then we get to 9 investor profiles. Now, when I told you that I work in a practice, I also see regular clients off the street and people who come to me who are lawyers, doctors, dentists, you know, people in film who also invest with people just like yourselves. So I decided to take inventory of my client list and put them into 9 different profiles for you to see and we'll eventually see how you'll interact with those people. So we have a grand inquisitor as the first one. This is someone who is always calling you every morning, asking you 5 pointless questions that you've already told them the answer to, just to ask the question. Because these are naive investors. They haven't invested before. There's a high level of anxiety underlining these calls that they're they're giving to you. They're asking a lot of questions, and it almost seems as if they don't have any awareness that you are working with other clients. Then there's neurotic Ned, who's the definition of pure anxiety. This is an investor who has been burned in the past and is bringing his emotional baggage of bad investments to you, and as a result is very slow and squeamish about investing. And every investment with you is like drawing blood from a stone. So he's purely anxious, and he has low confidence, and he'll be calling you as well. George Steinbrenner, he's like the CEO, the guy who makes a lot of quick decisions that don't involve a lot of information. These are people who are going to hold you accountable for just the bottom line. How much money are you making me? They have their investments scattered around a whole bunch of other advisors or consultants, and they're just all, they're very business and business-oriented, and there's an underlying sense of anger in these people that you want to keep under wraps. You don't want to directly conflict with these people. The politician. Politician is very superficial. He's a dreamer. And, you know, basically this is somebody who is constantly thinking out of the box. Don't focus on the details with me because I want to dream. This is the type of investor that is. The micromanager, this is someone who's frugal and meticulous about their investments. They are going to call you out on every missed document, every spelling error, and they're going to ask you why you're not saving them money every day. And these are red flag investors because they will also be the ones who will file legal charges against you if you do anything wrong because they're documenting everything. And there's also a lot of anxiety underlying their presentation. Then there's the thrill seeker who just invests for risk and fun, and you want to just basically play up, you know, every investment as being a potential risk, and they'll enjoy that. Then there's the celebrities. Maybe if you have a celebrity client, Mr. and Mrs. Look at Me, who are basically buying toys just for fun, and they're investing just to have more money to talk about who they're working with and, you know, who they know and what parties they're going to. Then there's a flake who loses all your documents that you send them. You have to call them 5 times to get them to send back you back the same document because they lost it. They don't show up for your appointments on time. They forget to call you, and you have to hunt them down just to close the deal with these individuals. And then lastly, Steady Mr. Goldfinger is there, and he is someone who involves, he needs a lot of trust in order to feel comfortable with a trade. And they're very slow to make a decision, but they're very thoughtful about the decision making. Okay, I created a matrix now to display the positive, powerful positive and negative interactions that may occur between our 4 investment consultant styles or advisor styles and their 9 related investor styles. And as you can see, these interactions can either end up being smooth and effortless, as evidenced by the green pluses, or can be fraught with conflict and miscommunication, which are the red minuses. And as you can see how you each relate to those particular characteristics. Basically, it's important to know yourselves and how to communicate with any of these 9 possible clients before you meet with them. This is also helpful, not only just to show which type of interaction you might have to watch out for, but once you land a client, we're going to be going through some do's and don'ts of how you should best communicate and work with them in an ongoing fashion. So just to give you a quick story, I was working with a group of financial advisors at a top firm here in Manhattan, and we were trying to look at their whole list of investors, and we're trying to figure out, you know, how to best close them and which category they belonged in and what, so on and so forth. So there was a male, 2 males and a female part of this team as financial advisors. The 2 men, one of them described himself and categorized himself as a decision maker. The second guy called himself a catalyst. The female advisor put herself in the category of facts and fear. They told me about a client that he was supposed to be a whale of an account that they wanted to get. And this client, they put into the category of the micromanager. This guy was an electrical engineer by trade. They described him as being very meticulous and socially awkward and just did not seem to show much emotion when he talked and was very brief and to the point and was known by others to be very frugal. And so basically when we boiled it down and looked at this matrix, we saw that out of the options they had to send their female advisor in to close that sale because the 2 guys would have had to completely change who they were in order to sell to that client. They would have to not be so flashy or make too many quick decisions, and you know, they would be irritated. It would create a very negative experience for both parties. But this female advisor, because of her category and the way she described herself, it would be more compatible in that interaction. And she ended up doing it and closing that deal. Okay. Next slide. Okay, today I was asked to speak about the occupational and social benefits of emotional discipline through bullish thinking. But because this is my hometown crowd, I wanted to leave you with this handbook, basically, of the do's and don'ts of how to work with any potential investor out of these nine. And these are based on, you know, what we've seen to be successful in my practice and working with these guys. I wanted to just go through one today, and hopefully at a later date I'll be presenting the subtle sales workshop, but I wanted you to take this with you. So if these two males of that advising team that I work with ended up going in and trying to close this particular micromanager, the electrical engineer, I would tell them, you know, basically these are the do's and don'ts that they would have to really adhere to even once they got the account. They'd have to prepare their presentation in advance. They'd have to focus on their business and provide evidence and facts to support their statements and product efficacy. The hardest thing that they'd have to do is return phone calls and emails, because decision makers and the catalysts hate that stuff. They like to be out making decisions, quick decisions, leave me alone, I don't want to talk to people. And also what they would detest is keeping written records of each communications with this type of investor. Because like I said, when you're working with a micromanager, they're the ones who can burn you because they're documenting everything. So therefore, you have to spend time documenting everything back. And decision makers don't like that. And people who think out of the box like catalysts, they hate attention to detail. So, and they have to be proactive in updating them with progress and setbacks. So that wouldn't really bode well for those two guys. But mostly, don't be casual, informal, or too personal. So the catalyst guy would be really having trouble not being personal. That would go against his true character. Don't dominate the conversation or appear too arrogant, cocky, or immature. Don't use small talk. And basically, don't lose important paperwork or make promises that you can't keep. These are examples of the do's and don'ts. You have a whole list of them now, and if you have any questions about these nine do's and don'ts, I'd be more than happy to answer them at a later date. So that brings us to another strategy that's very important, called the reminiscence strategy. This is a strategy used for older adults, 65 and up, and can be adapted for use with younger investors. So what is reminiscence? This is a reflective process that is very normal when people become older. Later on in life, they develop a propensity to like to think about the past and the emotions that connect to the past, and it gives them a chance to, you know, get some peace of mind later on in life. And you as an advisor or an investment management consultant have the chance to perpetuate that reflective process, which in the end makes you look like you have greater character than anyone else who's out there trying to close those type of individuals. So what are the benefits of reminiscence strategy? But I would say two of the most important is uncovering and reviewing their memories helps older adults find meaning, purpose, and clarity in setting their financial goals for the future. And then the past is a well of strength for older adults, and drawing on it creates a feeling of security and confidence, which will almost foster a stronger consultant-client relationship. You know, we talked back at the research, the more one cared for their client, the more money they made. So this kind of dovetails with that. If you start to ask them questions about bringing them back to the past, they will think highly of your character, they'll be more vulnerable to you in terms of liking you and believing in your product. And, you know, how do you start up a reminiscence conversation? Well, it's very important to use directive statements when you're sitting down with these individuals. You're going to be leaning forward, focusing on every word and asking them in a very directive fashion, tell me about a 20-year-old Mr. Jones. What was it like on your first day of college? You know, how did you feel when you bought your first house with your wife? You know, what was she like? Was she happy? You know, getting a feel for who these people are, what makes them tick, what maybe their investment styles have been in the past. Be very patient. And at the end, summarize with the client and show your value add by saying, you know, I'm doing this. I'm asking you all these out-of-the-box questions because I really care about who you are, what makes you tick, and where you come from. And, you know, at the end, send a thank you note for sharing the great stories and the personal experience with you, and they will really like that. Always be closing. ABC of sales. I'm sure many of you have heard of it if you're a financial advisor or you come across it. This is known as an absolute thought by psychologists. And I'm sure many of you, despite the fact this is supposed to be an empowering statement, I'm sure many of you aren't even aware that how counterproductive this can be in terms of your mood and your confidence level. Basically, because this is an absolute term, if someone follows this too rigidly, it could set them up for immediate failure, because if one always must be closing, then that means no one can ever fail or be rejected at any time. Now, this way of thinking is way too idealistic for what you individuals do. You're working with cream of the crop clients, or financial advisors are so competitive with each other, you're not going to close on every sale. So if you're going in with the thought, I must always be closing, you're going to be sadly mistaken at the end. So when you set an insurmountable goal for yourself, it can only lead to frustration or burnout. It's better to look at it from the law of averages standpoint. You know, after a succession of failures or rejections, you should be thinking, you know, I'm going to land the next one because of the law of averages. Even in baseball, the best hitters in baseball fail 7 out of every 10 at-bats. Okay, now, what is Jim the investment management consultant doing in this picture to manage this hypothetical market downturn or negative market outcome that David the investment management consultant isn't doing? Well, the truth is that Jim is using bullish thinking. He's perceiving this negative market outcome as a perceived challenge rather than David, who's looking at this as a sign of incompetence or failure on his part. Okay. Just to quickly show you how bearish thoughts affect outcomes, here we have Jim again, as he's, you know, lost his shirt for the day. He's really banged up. He's got bearish perceptions of that negative event, which spirals into negative physiological, performance-based, and emotional outcomes. So just by how he's perceiving the event in a reactive fashion, seeing that he's a victim of circumstance, he's a casualty of his own thoughts here. Whereas Jim, he changed his perspective about that same identical event that was negative. He handled it with grace and perseverance. And you see how just by changing and challenging his initial bearish thoughts, he can impact his physiological reactivity to that stressor, how he performed on the job, and his emotional drain on himself that day. And he was able to go on and take the bull by the horns and move on to his next task. So for the purposes of this workshop, I do tend to like to get a little competitive with the audiences. Everyone from this side of the room on, you guys are the bulls, okay? And everyone from this side of the room on are the bears for today. And you'll find out what that means shortly. Some of you might have remembered this quote from the movie Wall Street. And it talks about the importance of emotional discipline at work. Okay, what is bullish thinking? Why are we here? Bullish thinking is a concept that is rooted in the principles of cognitive behavioral therapy, and it follows the contention that an individual's perception or beliefs, whether bullish or bearish, about a stressful or negative event can actually lead to predictable consequences or outcomes. And these consequences or outcomes may be more positive or negative depending on how bullish or bearish your initial thought about that negative event was. And usually these outcomes are broken down into physiological reactions, your emotional intensity, your performance on the job, and your sense of control are all affected by how you perceive an event initially. Okay. Here we are. What I need is some help from the audience today. On a scrap paper or something, I'd like you all to write down one significant stressor or negative event that you might have had experienced at work in what you do. And Dr. Nucitelli is going to come by, just raise your hand, and, you know, he'll pick it up, and we're going to use this for later on in this workshop. So this is an example on the screen. A client gives you an ultimatum, says, you have 2 strikes left when you were day late in organizing the transfer of his funds. That would be an example of a stressor that has come up in another workshop. And this is a guy who received a phone call at 9 a.m. and was threatened by one of his clients that he was going to take his money elsewhere. So that's an example. Write it on a piece of scrap paper, raise your hand, and Dr. Nucitelli will come by. You also have a copy of our bearish vocabulary, which is for the purposes of bullish thinking, these are words that you need to watch out for because they create bearish thinking. These are called absolute words that can be easily challenged by historical evidence, if you really, rational historical evidence, if you really break down, you know, what you're thinking to every finite word, you could see, if you say, I never can land a client like this, there's, that means 0% chance that you could land this client. That's what you believe at the moment. But if they're back in your day, earlier in your career, you did land a client like that, well then you've actually taken a step back. You said, you know what, maybe I'm being a little reactive here, and I have landed clients like this before. This can't be true then, saying that I can never close this type of client. It makes it invalid. So this is for you to take. This is a copy of a bullish thinking monitoring log that you can take with you. This is what I use with my coaching clients for homework to help them learn this concept during a work week. And here you have examples. So let's use as an example David, the investment management consultant. A client gave him an ultimatum and said, you have 2 strikes left, when he was a day late in organizing the transfer of his or her funds. At the moment, he wrote down on his log, I'm too distracted. I screwed up and he will take his money elsewhere. Also at the moment, he might have written down in that frenzied state, I'm going to lose all my clients if I keep making simple mistakes. This will be a domino effect. I will lose my solid reputation and my business. All very negative, irrational thoughts. It's important to notice those underlying words. Those are those bearish vocabulary words that I mentioned. They are absolute, and he will need to go back and challenge those in the bullish thinking side of this. Now let's look at Jim. He faced a protracted market downturn. He said, many of my clients' portfolios are hurting. A new client calls at 9 a.m. to tell me that I'm incompetent because he's been losing money and his friend has done better with his investments. He writes down, I must be doing something wrong with my strategy. My money managers are obviously not doing their job, and I'm going to lose mine soon, too. He also wrote down, I should revamp my strategy and replace my poorly performing money managers. If I don't act quickly, I will lose this new client, as well as others who are nervous about this downturn in their investment. So he's willing to give up his success formula. He's willing to give up a long-term investment strategy because of a short-term market gyration that he's getting rattled. And as you can see, we have bearish outcomes associated with both of their bearish thoughts that I just brought up. And these will impact them from a physiological standpoint, from a performance-based standpoint. They will be a decrease in discipline, a decrease in client-centered services, and a decrease in the ability to handle short-term market losses and manage clients' emotions. If you can't manage your own emotions, you can't manage your clients. And as far as emotion, a very high level 7 to 10 of anxiety, frustration, and anger, and low sense of control at work. Now let's get back to David, who had the ultimatum, and basically see how he can manipulate the outcome of how he's feeling and thus the outcome of his performance. He could challenge those initial bearish thoughts with more solution-focused thinking that's more healthy and rational, like saying, I'm going to take things one step at a time and write everything down. I will follow through with a to-do list and maintain an organized and disciplined practice. Or he could challenge his initial thoughts by saying, I have a proven track record in this business and I've developed a solid reputation with this client. He will leave his money with me to ensure positive returns down the road. Now, obviously, just by thinking this way, you're going to be a little bit more settled. You're going to be able to have composure throughout the rest of your day. Jim, he handled his market downturn by saying, my strategy has been effective in the past. I will not second-guess my decisions or the money managers that work for me. We will stick to our long-term investing strategy. I will help my client understand the realities of investing and remind him of his stated risk tolerance and the long-term expectations that are required to minimize risk over time. Or he could say, I will stay disciplined and focused on my investment strategy. I will not be swayed by short-term market gyrations because the investor is bombarded by so much recent information. I will keep my clients grounded in reality and help them manage their reaction to short-term loss. I will make them money over the next 3 years. So this is a way for you to precondition yourself and your clients to negative news. But you have to do it. It starts with you first before you can help your clients. And obviously, by just thinking this way, you're going to impact the outcomes very significantly from a performance standpoint. You might still be frustrated, angry, and worried, but it's going to be so much more manageable at a 2, 3, or 4, and your sense of control on the job will also shoot up. So now, basically, we're going to see how well you've learned the concept of bullish thinking. And we have the bulls and the bears, and we're going to see how easy it is for you to come up with bearish and bullish thoughts that represent your team process about a specific stressor on the job that Dr. Nucitelli has taken out of the audience, and it's probably one of the more recurrent ones that seem to pop up. So, someone in the audience, or a bunch of people, wrote, "The market is down for a day or a week. The client asks if we should review allocation for the sixth time in a short period." Okay, I noticed some chuckles here, so that's good. So this is something that can really, you know, be a drag if not channeled properly, if you don't think about it the right way. So for the purposes of this challenge, we're going to, let's see. All right. Okay, I want you to, I want the bulls to write down a response to this, a bullish response, as if you were a person experiencing the stressor, using the way I described the examples of how you think bullishly, using solution-focused skills, talking about historical evidence. You know, this could be fictitious. I want you all to come up with as many bullish thoughts to handle. The market is down for a day or week. A client asks me if we should review allocation for the sixth time in a short period. I want you to come up with what a bullish person would say to themselves and write down, and as many as you can get, because this is a challenge, remember that. Now the bears, I want you to be as bearish about this situation as possible, which I'm sure won't be difficult, and I want you to really use those absolute terms from the vocabulary list that I gave you, as many as you can get, and be as irrational and angry as you can get. And I'm going to give you 90 seconds, and then we're going to move on. So take 90 seconds. Now remember, this is like law school. I'm going to be calling on any of you, so you better, for your own team's sake, write down as many as you can.
Okay, everybody put the pen down, please.
All right.
All right, we have a lot of people here, and we want to pick some winners. So what we'd like everybody to do right now is stand up and check under your chair, and if you find something that's unusual, please take standing.
Everyone up.
And there's a chair next to you that then you can check that as well. It'll be taped to the bottom of the chair. It's green.
It's a common theme.
Here we got one back there.
Okay, remain standing if you have. There should be one more person who's not looking under their empty chair. Hey, bears. Have the bears looked under the empty chair? Stop hibernating and look under your chair. Okay, another bear.
One more bear.
One more bear to make this even.
There we go.
Okay, there we go. Okay. So why don't you show the audience what you found? All right. And then how does it feel?
Pretty embarrassing. I think it would have been better if it was
20. Absolutely. But it did create an emotion in you.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, motion creates emotion. And, you know, so... And what's your name?
Brian.
Okay. So for Brian and how many other people we have here? We just got Mike?
We have five bulls.
So for the other nine people, for Brian and the nine individuals, they benefited from what we call the first lesson for today, which is you have to get up off your butt to make a buck. Okay? Now, the funny thing is, and you know, I want you to remain standing. So the rest of you who got up and were scouring under your chairs or the chairs next to you, that brings me to the second lesson that you could come away with today, which is just because you get up off your butt doesn't entitle you to make a buck. Because you're working with the cream of the crop, you're trying to eke out the accounts that everyone else wants, you have to have the competitive edge, and you have to employ things like bullish thinking and subtle sales to actually get that edge over people. And Mike, do we want to go and start asking the Bulls. The six people, the five people who are standing are now the Bulls' representatives. We want you to each, one at a time, read your bullish thoughts that you wrote down, and anything that's non-redundant will count as a point for the Bulls. At the end, the winning team will get to use our donate to throw the ball target and win a gift certificate as well as a prize from IMCA. So, why don't we start with this gentleman? How would you handle that stressor as a Bull? Very good. So I guess we'll give him credit for two on that. Okay. What about you? Speak quieter, please.
Have a short-term plan, long-term objectives. Similar to that.
Say that again for the...
I'm at the short-term, your long-term.
Okay. So I'll give one point for that. How about you?
We've seen this many times before. It's a buying opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you got? Okay, did we hit everyone on this team?
Yeah, sure.
Five? Okay, now let's get to the Bulls, the Bears. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Some Bulls
don't get
Bears?
Squeamish? Yeah, someone want to go to the Bears? All right, well, that's going to affect the outcome, maybe. Bulls.
These are Bears.
Bears. Yep. You're giving me $10?
No, I got this.
Oh, okay.
I think the Bulls only got a buck.
Okay, what do you have?
I must review my strategy. I have to be able to time the market better. I will definitely lose my clients if someone with better performance.
Okay. So those are three things, you know, you're starting to second guess yourself on that. That's good. Three. How about you? Great. That's great. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, that was three, Mike.
Okay. Let's get out. Everybody feels the same way. No one knows what to do.
Wow, you're great at this. Give him full credit for that one. How about you?
What a disaster. Forget this client and move on. There's no way I can save him.
Nice. That's great. And last but not least?
This is impossible. There's no way to know what this guy is thinking. I'm just going to forget about it and look for something else to do. I'm quitting the business.
I think I pretty much know who won that one.
Bears take it 15-4.
Well, I didn't realize I had this much work cut out for me in 1 hour in terms of turning Bears to Bulls, but it shows you just how difficult it is to think bullish about stressors that happen at work. What we want to do now, just before we start to have people go up and win their prizes and demonstrate their aptitudes of throwing a stress ball, I want to just stand up if you categorize yourself as a decision maker earlier on. All the decision makers stand up and be counted. You have it? She has 10. Okay. Now, you guys can sit. Everyone who categorized himself as a catalyst, please stand. Okay. How much? 15, Mike. How about the voices of reason? Yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
26, right? Lastly, facts and fear. He's not fearful being the only one, I guess. Give that guy a stress ball, Mike. All right. Okay, so now basically what we're going to do is, Mike, what's the breakdown?
33%, well, 32, basically 33, 33, 33, and then this down, the facts and fear.
33.
33, and 33%. Right. Down,
mm-hmm.
Right. And
business deal.
Okay, so it's pretty even, except for...
With a standard deviation of plus or minus 3.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember, we went for psychology, so have some mercy on us with statistics. All right, well, for all the bears, you can come up and meet Mike and take a shot at one shot at winning a prize by throwing the ball through the hole. And basically anyone else who lost was a bull and lost can still come up and meet with our other assistant to get a stress ball to take with them so that they can get better at this bullish thinking stuff. And then after that, that's it. Thank you for coming, and remember, take action, not be reactive.